Welcome to Broadway World Some Like It Pop podcast. I am Matt Tamanini, Broadway World senior TV and film critic. And as always, I am joined by the brains of our operation, Broadway World TV's Los Angeles Bureau Chief and a BWW OCD MVP, Jennifer McHugh. How was your Thanksgiving out west, Jen?
I can't complain. Lots of good food, good friends, no family, just the way I like it.
All right. You can follow Jen on Twitter at EponineQ. That's EponineQ. You can follow me at BWWMatt. That's BWWMatt. And you can read us both across various Broadway World sites. Today, we're going to kind of veer off on our normal format since many TV shows are taking hiatuses around. Is it hiatuses or hiati?
That's a great question. I'm the Romanian and Russian expert, not the Latin expert, so.
I did take 2 years of Latin in high school, and I have absolutely no idea. So I'm going to go with hiatuses.
Okay.
So many TV shows take hiatuses around the holidays, and since TV is kind of what we focus on the most, we are going to talk about one major TV thing, and then we're going to get into some holiday-themed conversations as well as some lists. Now, lists are things that Jen is far more prepared to do than I am.
That's where Jen, the OCD comes in.
Yes, that's why we're leading there. Jen, we've kind of worked together across the continent for the past year and a half, and I've learned that you have a habit that could generously be called obsessive-compulsive when it comes to making pop culture lists and spreadsheets. My question is, do you in fact have a list of your favorite TV and movie-related lists?
Yes.
No, you don't.
I've just discovered this new app called the List app.
Oh, God.
And it was like BJ Novak created it, and it was like he just reached into my dreams and pulled it out. And it's literally just an app where you write lists. Doesn't that sound divine?
It sounds really... really weird. So, like, tell us your breadth and scope of list and spreadsheet making.
I make a spreadsheet for almost everything. I definitely have a spreadsheet for my television viewing habits because I watch too much TV. I have a spreadsheet for my favorite movies by year since 1979. I have a spreadsheet of all my favorite TV shows, whether they're on the air or in the past. I have spreadsheets of the presidents of the United States, how long they were in office, how they died. Crazy. It's insane. It's an insane quality that I am unapologetic for.
Have you talked with anybody about this before? Have you
no,
sought professional intervention?
I just think it's really good organization.
Okay. If that's what helps you sleep at night. I tend not to remember or focus on the individual details of things. And we've talked about this before with quotes. I don't really do quotes very, very well. And I don't remember specific minutia about episodes. I tend to remember larger plot points. Maybe that's because I've grown up watching soap operas where who the hell cares what happened on the episode on this Thursday that week? Cause you just think about the bigger plot points.
My best friend and I, if you give us a quote from Friends, we can tell you the episode and the season within a few seconds.
Yeah, not my cup of tea. So as we get into these lists, I want you and everyone, you know, both of the people listening to know that this is a stretch for me. I don't do this as well as Jen does. So I apologize. But something I think that we can both discuss pretty well is the biggest thing in TV, even though it's not on TV. Jessica Jones is the second Marvel Netflix series coming after Daredevil that started streaming earlier this year. It's the second of four Marvel Netflix series that will eventually integrate fully into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe. For those unaccustomed to the Jessica Jones world, Jessica Jones is a hard-drinking private investigator who lives in New York's Hell's Kitchen, which is also coincidentally where Daredevil is set. Jessica also just so happens to have incredible super strength and the ability to jump so high that people think she is flying. Like Daredevil, the Jessica Jones series is incredibly dark, but in a very different way, and far more emotional and moody than any of the Marvel films or TV series. And it very purposefully delves into some serious topics that you don't often see in comic book fare, and I think all for the better. the basic story is that there is a supervillain named Kilgrave, played by the 10th Doctor Who, David Tennant, who is also the star of the UK TV show Broadchurch. And his super ability is that he has mind control. He can control, he can tell people to do whatever he wants them to do, and they will do it. For months, I don't actually think they say how long it is, but for presumably for months, after seeing Jessica use her super strength, he keeps her under his control for any number of untoward purposes. I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but I think I'm safe in saying that this is not only the most powerful TV show or even movie that Marvel has ever made, but I do think it's my favorite. I will admit that I still have 3 episodes left in the season, so I don't know how that last quarter of the season wraps up. However, I am fairly confident that when I do watch them either tonight or tomorrow, my opinion isn't going to change. Obviously, I have a lot of thoughts about this show, but Jen, I think it is very much appropriate if I defer to you first, for many thematic reasons. So what did you think of Jessica Jones?
Well, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know it was in the same universe as Daredevil. Someone pointed it out to me. I didn't watch Daredevil. Now I'm going to go back and watch it. But
oh, you should. It's good. It's good.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things. So I wanted to check this out because I do like Kristen Ritter. And I was immediately sucked in. It was like everything you said. It's just very, very dark. And the people, David Tennant as a villain is a revelation, I think. and I know you haven't seen the last 3 episodes, but the last quarter of the series for me was the best part of it. It just grew. The build was incredible. And I have 1 more episode to go. I'm going to watch the finale after we're finished. And it is hard to take your eyes off it. It's beautifully shot. Mm-hmm. And it's really riveting. I'm kind of really more invested in the supporting characters. Mike Coulter, who plays Nick Cage. Not Nick Cage.
Nope, not Nick Cage.
Luke Cage. And Rachel Taylor as Trish Walker, I think she's a fascinating character. And I'm really invested. So I'm glad that it's doing well for Marvel. And, you know, we always say that we're going to disagree about everything, but I think I'm on the same page with you.
Yeah. Coincidentally, you mentioned Mike Coulter as Luke Cage. Coincidentally, Marvel's Luke Cage is the next Marvel Netflix series. That'll be followed by Marvel's Iron Fist, also set in Hell's Kitchen. And then the heroes from Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist will all unite in Marvel's The Defenders. So there will be plenty more from these characters moving forward. You're right, though. The cast is fantastic. I think Kristen Ritter is... you thought that David Tennant as a villain is a revelation. I think Kristen Ritter is so unbelievably perfect in this role. I mean, anyone who's watched TV and movies of the last 2 decades knows Kristen Ritter. You know, I first kind of saw her on Gilmore Girls and Veronica Mars and Mona Lisa Smile. And she's done really good work for a long time. But this is exceptional. I'm going to tie this into the theme as a whole to get back to showing how great she is. But what I love about this show is that it's not about blowing up cities. So much of Marvel is about the big, overwhelming destruction that villains and then in some ways the heroes can have on large groups of people. Daredevil pulled that back a little bit, but it was still a city and neighborhood wide story. So much of Jessica Jones is about the impact that people and actions and decisions can have on individuals. The danger is personal, the trauma is personal, and really when it comes down to it, it's not subtle that the whole season is really about women having consent taken away from them. There are men that have consent taken away from them, but ultimately it is a one big metaphor for rape culture in the United States and women surviving rape and PTSD. And it is so powerful when you take a superhero story, a woman who literally is a superhero, and have to see her go through those things. I mean, it's heartbreaking. I think Kristen Ritter gives incredible performances. She's got these huge, big, dark eyes, And in moments where she does let herself down, whether it's with Trish, like you mentioned, and Rachel Taylor, or Hope, who's another one of Kilgrave's victims, played by Erin Moriarty, who I think does great work as well, or when she's just by herself in her office drinking some whiskey, which she does pretty much all the time, Kristen Ritter kind of lets you in, and you see in her eyes, she's reliving every single moment of violation that she suffered at the hands of Kilgrave. And I think it's exceptionally powerful work, and not only because it's beautifully shot, like you said, not only is the story really cool, not only is the action great, but the emotional storytelling that they get into here that is so unusual for superhero stuff, especially for Marvel, makes this at the top of the 2015 list for me, or towards the top at least.
Yeah, another person to mention is it Eka or Eka Darville?
Yeah, I don't know how to say his name, but he is.
He plays her really next door neighbor Malcolm, who's an addict, and he figures into the story without spoilers at some point. But he too has popped up on a lot of shows throughout the last few years, and I feel like he is one of those people that in 10 years he's going to be on everybody's lips.
Yeah, yeah, he's great. He, because like you said, he's an addict, and he goes through different phases in his addiction cycle. So you see a lot of different colors from him. He's really great. And I know you haven't seen Daredevil yet, but what I think is really smart that Marvel is doing with these Defenders series on Netflix is that they are letting the writers and directors have freedom in how to approach their stories in ways that are appropriate to those specific characters. Daredevil feels very much like a dark New York City kung fu movie. There's a lot of kung fu action, and that plays into Daredevil's background. Jessica Jones is noir. I mean, she is a hard-drinking PI. I mean, if that's not Humphrey Bogart, I don't know what is. And the way that Melissa Rosenberg, who is the creator and the executive producer and one of the writers, the way she set up this world, it is so different from really anything else Marvel has done. And it's funny because when you look at Melissa Rosenberg's track record, she wrote the Twilight series. She's done a lot of other stuff. She did the Batman spinoff show called Birds of Prey that lasted like 37 seconds. She did a show, with Tom Cavanaugh that I loved called Love Monkey. The way that she has kind of positioned this world to be something so outside of the, Iron Man, Captain America worlds, yet still very much present in their reality is really fascinating. And I'm looking forward to watching these last three episodes, and I'm very, very excited to see how this plays into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Agreed.
Good, as it should be. So this is a show that, obviously, because it just came out last week, we have both been binging. So that leads us into, now that so many shows, as we mentioned earlier, are on a holiday hiatus, we wanted to talk and give a few recommendations because we, as we've said last time, our recommendations are always perfect and always spot on. We wanted to give you some binge-worthy shows that you can catch up on over the holidays. We're going to both give you a comedy. We're both going to give you a drama. I am going to stick probably – I'm thinking I'm going to stick a little more modern than Jen is if I guess properly. My comedy is going to be Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. It came out earlier this year. There's 13 episodes, all of them on Netflix. Season 2 premieres next spring in 2016. And this was one of the most pleasant surprises I've had in a long time. It's a show from Tina Fey that was originally developed for NBC. NBC then passed. They went to Netflix, and it turned into an unbelievably huge hit. And I love everything about Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Ellie Kemper plays Kimmy Schmidt. She is a very naive woman who spent the last 15 years in an underground bunker at the hands of a David Koresh-like cult leader who told them that the world had ended, and they lived in a bunker for 15 years. They come out and realize that the world has not ended, and she is now Peter Pan'd as a 15-year-old, even though she's pushing 30. And you think you take that premise, and it's hysterical. Everything about this show was great. Titus Burgess, Carol Kane, Jane Krakowski, John Hamm, even Tina Fey pops in. Everything about this show was hysterical, and I can't wait for season two. And if you haven't watched Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, binge these 13 episodes. They're only 22 minutes, 25 minutes at a time, so you can get through them really quickly, and it is absolutely fantastic.
Well, it does reassure me that you do have some laughter in your soul if you found this funny, because it is one of the greatest comedies. I'm really excited for season two. I think that season one was a nice big hit and a welcome F you to NBC, who turned it down, which I always enjoy. So
yeah, you've got issues with NBC.
I do, like, hate NBC.
We'll have to get into that at some point, because I understand not liking certain networks, but this seems personal.
Yeah,
so we can get into that later.
Okay.
So what is your binge-worthy comedy?
Well, mine's a little bit the opposite of yours, because you gave them a quick 13-episode binge watch that they can do in a day. However, I'm going back a few years to this show called Psych.
Yes!
And I discovered Psych when I was overseas, and my brother had recommended it to me. And it's just this silly show about this kid. His name is Sean, and when he's little, his father teaches him how to be incredibly observant, how to read people, body language, small signs that most people don't acknowledge. As he grows up, he turns it into a hobby and passes himself off as a psychic to the police department in Santa Barbara. And him and his partner in crime, the incomparable Dulé Hill, who I adore, they decide to open an agency called the Psych Agency and help and solve cases. Now, over the course of many, many seasons, there are some thread lines, you know, of overall plots and romances and everything, but you can really watch any episode on its own. So if you want to just have some mindless fun, it's like a caper in every episode, and there's nonstop comedy. Both of them are great physical comedians, and Corbin Burnson plays Sean's father, and Timothy Omenson is just incomparable as the snooty detective at the department. And I recommend it because it was on, I think, USA.
It was on USA.
So it might have slipped through some fingers, or people just saw it in passing and never invested much. But over the holidays, if you just need some brainless laughter, that's my recommendation.
I couldn't agree more. We've mentioned Psych off air together. I have the entire series on DVD, and it is great. Maggie Lawson, who plays Juliet O'Hara, who's one of the detectives who eventually becomes a love interest, who is actually James Roday, who is the star's real-life girlfriend, is just great. There's a ton of Broadway people. You'll see Sutton Foster's done episodes. Adam Rapp has done episodes. It's really, really funny. And Dulé Hill is a Broadway guy in and of himself. And Timothy Amundsen, who's one of the stars of Gallivant, ABC's musical show that's coming back for season two in January. Really, really good. I'm pleasantly surprised that you went with Psych.
And Dulé Hill does break out the tap dance shoes in a few episodes, so you can't miss
those. In a few episodes. I mean, they sing in pretty much every episode.
There is actually a musical episode that was one of my favorites of the series. So,
yes.
Yeah, very highly good. Recommend.
And what's great about this show is this show, I think it debuted in, like, I want to say, like, 2006. And then a year later, a show that I think might be still on the air, I don't know because I don't care, on CBS called The Mentalist debuted, and it pretty much rips off the exact same plot line of Psych, with a guy who's really smart and really perceptive and claims to be a psychic. And the people at Psych noticed this show called The Mentalist and make fun of it at every possible turn. There's a really fun super cut, if you look it up on YouTube, of every time Psych characters make fun of The Mentalist. It's really great. It's What a great comedy. I can't recommend that one more. Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
All right. Well, since you did so well with Psych, what's the drama that you recommend binge watching?
Well, I know I'm going to endear myself to you for this one. And if it's yours, I do apologize. But
it's all right.
I'm going to go with Friday Night Lights.
It's not mine, but it's very worthy.
If you're one of the people who have not sat down and watched this show from beginning to end, then I need you to get on it right away. Season two is a little bit of a miss for me, but power through it. And it does really, from beginning to end, this is Jason Kadams. Is that how you say his name?
I believe so. Yes.
And he first caught my attention of my beloved Roswell when I was in the early 2000s. I was in love with that show and I just really liked his writing. And Friday Night Lights, I think it's based on a movie or a documentary or both.
It's based on a movie. It's executive produced by Peter Berg, who produced the movie, but the movie was actually based on a novel, or on a book. I don't know if it's fictional or not. But so it's the book, then the movie, then the TV show, and now apparently a musical, which we'll mention here in a second.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. But it does follow this football team in Texas, and as I'm sure is widely known across this country, in Texas, football is everything. But you do not have to be a football fan to enjoy this show, because football is just the setting, and the characters are fascinating. You will fall madly in love with Coach Taylor, as the whole world did, and the football players as they grow into high school graduates, and then new players come along. You just really invested in everybody in the cast. It's just really well done. And if you don't want to laugh and you just want more of a family drama, then that's my recommendation for the binging.
Yeah, it's such a great show. I mean, and if you look at the people who were on this show, they've turned out to go on to have pretty good careers. I mean, obviously Kyle Chandler and Connie Britton, who were Coach Taylor and his wife Tammy Taylor, they were already fairly big TV stars. But then if you look through, like, Zach Guilford, Jesse Plemons, Taylor Kitsch, Adrian Palicki, Minka Kellis, Michael B. Jordan, who is about to light the world on fire in Creed, all of these people were major stars of Friday Night Lights, and it is such a beautiful show. And like you said, you and I are both sports fans. It actually is probably better if you aren't a football fan, because the actual football scenes are not so hot. I mean, they're kind of like most TV and movie sports scenes where they get people who aren't that great at sports to act like they are. But beside that, it's one of the most endearing, touching, beautiful, funny shows you will ever see. And I'm just going to throw it out there. This will not be the last time that we discuss Friday Night Lights in this episode. So that's one reason why I avoided it in this column, is because I knew I wanted to talk about it later. But my drama, and I don't know if this is cheating or not. I'm not sure how you categorize this, because it is so unique. Is I'm going with Sherlock. Sherlock is a BBC show. Why are you laughing?
Because it was my number two choice.
Yes! All right. Orphan Black season one. Just season one was my second choice. But Sherlock is unique. It's a BBC show, but it's only had 9 episodes, but each episode is an hour and a half. It is, as you can probably guess, based on the famed British detective Sherlock Holmes, but it is set in the modern time, 2015, as I assume, the upcoming season, whatever. It's not dissimilar from maybe Elementary, which is on CBS, just good. Where Elementary,
agreed.
I love the cast, not necessarily in the same ballpark as Sherlock. Sherlock stars Benedict Cumberbatch, who has gone on to become a huge star as Sherlock Holmes, alongside Martin Freeman as John Watson, who has gone on to become a huge star. And every episode, which is, an hour and a half, they dive into some big mystery. They overlap a little bit, but it's really incredible storytelling. An unbelievable, fascinating performance by Benedict Cumberbatch. They've had 3 seasons, but they don't come out every year. So it's been a while. I think the first season came out in 2010. So they've had 3 seasons over these 5 years, 4.5 years. The reason I recommend this to binge watch now is because there is a new special, a new episode coming out on New Year's Day. Now, what's unique about this is it's actually set in the Victorian era. So it is not related to the rest of the storyline at all. But all of the cast members are going back to when Sherlock Holmes was actually originally based. It'll debut in the UK on the BBC and here on PBS on New Year's Day. And then the 4th series, as they call it in England, will begin filming later this year and will air in 2017. But the characters are so great. The storytelling is so great. And they always weave very well into actual Sherlock Holmes novels, if you have any kind of experience with those. It's just great, fun storytelling and some great performances. Not only, I did want to mention, obviously, Benedict Cumberbatch, Martin Freeman, but you have to love Andrew Scott as Moriarty. He's also become fairly big now. He was one of the stars of the most recent Bond film, and really, really great stuff. So I'm going with Sherlock on this one.
I have to agree, and Andrew Scott's Moriarty is probably my most favorite interpretation of that character ever. He is just a 100% psychopath, but hilarious.
Yeah.
And I fell madly in love with him during the first season.
Yeah, and little trivia for you too. In season three, Lars Mikkelsen is one of the characters that is recurring in season three. He is, of course, the brother of Mads Mikkelsen, who played Hannibal. So we'll throw that out there as well.
Such a small world.
Anyway, so that gives you your holiday binge-watching stuff, but we want to actually talk about some holiday-themed movies and TV shows. Jen and I both saw The Night Before, the new comedy from Seth Rogen and crew. It stars Seth Rogen along with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Anthony Mackie. And basically the plot is that those three are best friends. And for the last 14 years, they've been spending their Christmas Eve together going through some of their favorite holiday traditions. It all started with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, Ethan, lost both of his parents in a drunk driving accident on Christmas Eve. And so they've all bandied together to give him a good holiday every year since. However, 14 years later, Seth Rogen's character Isaac is about to have a baby. Anthony Mackie's character has turned into this huge NFL star. And so this is going to be the final time that they're going to have this holiday tradition. They, for the last, I think about 6-7 years, they've been trying to get into this elusive holy grail of Christmas parties called the Nutcracker Ball. So that is their goal for this night. And as you can imagine, they get there. But along the way, there's some craziness. There's a lot of drug use, a lot of profanity, and a lot of craziness. And I have to tell you, I'm loath to admit this, but I think that The Night Before might be my new favorite holiday comedy. Sorry, Christmas Vacation.
Wow. That's high praise.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. We can get into it a little more, but I want you to go ahead and tell me what you thought first. I'm a little nervous. If I like a comedy, I'm hoping that you don't make fun of me for it.
No, I mean, these guys, this is just my wheelhouse. Everything they put out, I love. I know exactly what it is when I'm going in, and it's always gratifying. This Is the End is one of my favorite movies in comedy over the past 10 years. And I loved The Interview. I just love everything they do. It's just my type of comedy. So it gave me exactly what I wanted. It was three incredibly likable guys just being stupid, which is my favorite thing. And to me, the star was Michael Shannon.
Oh, God, was he good.
He stole the movie, and it was just mindless fun. It's marketed correctly. And it was just a good time. And there is a lot of profanity and a lot of drug use. So I wouldn't say, hey, go take the kids or take mom. Mom would probably like it. But you're right. It's just belly laughs and dick and fart jokes and everything you want in a holiday comedy.
Right. Christmas trees, mistletoe, dick and fart jokes. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you want. Right. Michael Shannon, who is one of our generation's fine, great actors of both stage and screen, plays the guy's high school drug dealer. And he's obviously so much more, but he is such a weird character. And I know of Michael Shannon's great stage and film career, but I've never seen him I don't remember ever seeing him interviewed or anything like that, but he did an episode of At Midnight, which you know that I love, along with Seth Rogen. And I'm not sure he was acting as Mr. Green, the pot dealer, because dude's weird in real life, too. But he was fantastic in this movie, really great. And the whole ensemble cast is great. I mean, Lizzie Kaplan from Masters of Sex plays Joseph Gordon-Levitt's ex-girlfriend. And Jillian Bell from 22 Jump Street plays Seth Rogen's character's wife. Mindy Kaling is in it. There's a crap ton of cameos that I don't want to ruin. Although the one I will say, I mentioned this one in my review because it can't go unmentioned, is Ilana Glazer from Broad City, who plays Rebecca, who is a Christmas-hating troll who gets mixed up with Anthony Mackie's character. She is absolutely perfect, and I'm hoping against hope that they decide to make a movie about that character because she is so hysterical in this movie.
Yeah, that backstory would be a fascinating tale.
Wouldn't it? Absolutely, that would be great. And I could just see her running around New York City ruining people's Christmases. I would watch that. Like, that would be a great movie. And she's fantastic. I've seen episodes of Broad City, but I haven't, as you know, I don't watch funny things.
Sure.
But it's really good. So I knew who she was, but as soon as she came on the screen, but to see how great she was in this, like, I feel like I have to go watch Broad City now because she's fantastic. For me, along with Michael Shannon, she stole this movie.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I wish that my family were a little bit more open-minded, and I would say, everybody, let's go to the theaters on Christmas Day. But this is definitely one to see with your buddies and just laugh like idiots, because it is, it's just mindless, brainless fun. And I love those guys, all of them. It was nice to see not only Michael Shannon, but Anthony Mackie. He's been all up in the superhero movies and the dramas. And it's always nice to see people play against type. And I think that those two really personify that in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of this one. And in fact, we're going to segue into our first list. Our first list, we're going to go, because I don't make lists, I merged my favorite holiday movies and holiday TV episodes into one list. I'm sure you have 18 different lists broken up by qualifiers, but I'm going to start my list with The Night Before, because like I said, it has overtaken Christmas Vacation and even Home Alone, a movie I must have seen 45 times growing up. This is number 5 for me on my list because it's that funny. I said earlier I didn't want to be a prisoner of the moment talking about Jessica Jones, but I'm always a prisoner of the moment. So I'm putting this on my list. I love this movie, and I'm going to start there. We don't need to go into it anymore. However, I'm going to transition from my first into yours. I have no idea how you're going to get all 37 items you're going to talk about in, but I'll let you go there next for your list.
Well, I have 5 holiday movies and 5 TV episodes.
Give me one of each. Give me one of each. Give me number 5 on both lists.
All right. Number 5 on my holiday movie list is One Magic Christmas, which is a dark movie from the 80s starring Mary Steenburgen and Harry Stanton. And
wow.
It's kind of a, you know, old formula where the woman is miserable on Christmas and says, oh, I'm so miserable, this is horrible. And this dark angel, Harry Stanton, says, okay, let's show you how horrible it can be, and shows her just how bad it can be before she realizes how good she has it. It's not a very popular Christmas movie. I saw it when I was little and for some reason loved it, and it's still one of my yearly viewings.
All right, never heard of it. Anything Harry Dean Stanton does where he plays an angel sounds funny.
Yes.
So I'll give you that. Okay, so that's your number 5 holiday movie. What's your number 5 holiday TV episode?
Community, Abed's Uncontrollable Christmas.
Okay, I've never watched Community. Do you want to
Community,
say
this was an episode that is done all in stop animation. Stop.
Oh, okay. Now I remember that.
Abed, he goes on a journey trying to find the meaning of Christmas, and the whole episode is it stop animation or stop motion?
Stop motion, but
just old Wallace and Gromit and all those Christmas specials, and it is brilliant. And it's really just a long episode to make fun of Lost, and it made me laugh so hard, and I did not see it coming. And I even, back in the good old days when Damon Lindelof was on Twitter, he even commented, said, "Well played, Community."
Nice. Yeah, I'm surprised that you liked something that made fun of Lost, considering how into Lost you are.
I am so into Lost that I can appreciate its flaws, and that people, it was done with the utmost respect, and even if the creator was like, that was funny, I can get on board with it.
Yeah, because he doesn't take commentary about his shows very well on Twitter,
and
especially.
He thought it was amusing, so.
Okay, all right, I'm good with that. I'm going to go on my list with a TV episode. It comes from it's the 10th episode of the first season of one of my favorite shows. It's not in my top 5, but one of my favorite shows, Veronica Mars. It is An Eccles Family Christmas.
That is my number 3.
Is it really?
Yes.
Nice. Okay. I love everything about Veronica Mars. I've been a Kristen Bell fan since the pilot of this show, and Rob Thomas and Diane Ruggiero, who now work together on iZombie, they were involved in this show. Diane Ruggiero, who's the executive producer on iZombie, wrote this episode. It's so good. It has everything from Veronica solving a mystery, as always, but it involves poker, it involves a Christmas party, and it involves Harry Hamlin getting stabbed. So what else could you possibly want from a Christmas episode?
I agree. I'm in love with Veronica Mars, and Logan Eccles and Harry Hamlin playing his father, and that whole family dynamic of the famous actor with the kid who's trying to fit in, but he's kind of a jerk and has a heart of gold, you know, like, take my money. That's just everything I want in a YA series or whatever it is. But that is number three on my holiday Christmas list. So you must be doing it right.
Yeah, like, Logan Eccles is such a great character to be paired with Veronica Mars. Like, Jason Doering does a great way to balance off how sassy Veronica is, so much so that they made him her one true love, I guess. I mean, you know, her equal. And I don't think, if you watch this first season, that that was the plan. I think the chemistry between those two was just so great that Rob Thomas and company just couldn't resist.
It's true. When they first kissed, I literally jumped off the couch. I was not expecting it. But then it was so like, yes, of course.
Of course. All right. So I used your number three. So why don't you give me your fours and then we'll work back. So assuming I don't take anything else.
My four movie is Scrooged.
Bill Murray.
I don't know if it needs much explanation. In the 80s, he remade Christmas Carol as a modern day Scrooge. And Bill Murray does no wrong in my eyes. And this take on that exhausting tale just made me laugh incredibly hard. Still to this day, the little tiny things. Carol Kane is the ghost of Christmas present. And what's his name? David, the guy from the New York Dolls, David, who plays the ghost of Christmas past.
I do not know.
I can't remember his name. He plays the ghost of Christmas past in the cab and... It just hits on every level, and I watch it every year with my brothers, and we laugh like it's the first time we've seen it.
Well, and that, I wanted to bring this up, that I can't wait for Netflix's A Very Murray Christmas to come out next month. It is a Christmas musical comedy film from Bill Murray, Mitch Glazer, and Sofia Coppola, directed by Sofia Coppola, and it's got an all-star cast. I can't wait for that to be released next month.
Well, I'm not a Sofia Coppola fan, but we'll discuss that at a later date.
Okay, but it's still Bill Murray and Christmas.
It is still Bill Murray, yes.
Okay, so what's your number four TV episode?
MASH. Going way back.
Dude.
Death Takes a Holiday. And it was one of the best episodes I've ever seen on television to this day, where the doctors at the MASH, Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, get a patient in, and he is dying, and it is Christmas Day. And they all decide that they do not want to let his family know that he died on Christmas, so it'll ruin their Christmases for the rest of their lives. So they work to keep him alive until after midnight. Hmm. And it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
You are really old.
I'm so old. But MASH stands the test of time.
I know.
And I don't care.
No, that's fine. I'll allow it. Number three on my list is another TV episode. It is season 2, episode 10 of Scrubs. The episode is My Monster. It is the first time that Zach Braff's JD and Sarah Chalk's Elliot, how do I say this, have sex. They the tension has been building for a season and a half, and finally it's Christmas. Elliot's been cut off from her rich daddy, and she has nowhere to go, so she stays at Elliot's or at JD's apartment. And he finally says, screw it, walks across the apartment while she's brushing her teeth. They make out, have this huge, long, like, intense makeout scene that is kind of weird for Scrubs because that's not what they do, but it was really perfect for these characters. And it was had some humor thrown in. And it, the episode also features the fantastic Sarah Lancaster, who I love from everything she does, but especially from Chuck. And it's just a great episode, and I love Scrubs very much. One of my favorite comedies of all time. So I'm going with My Monster from Scrubs as number three on my list.
I do love me some Scrubs.
But not on your list.
Not on my list. I had to narrow it down. You know, I had 20 in each. My number three, you already said, Veronica Mars. My number three movie is Christmas Vacation. I don't think that's a big surprise. Does that need any setup? Chevy Chase, no. Holidays? Hilarity ensues. Classic.
Yeah, I think if you don't know Christmas Vacation, you probably should be sent out of the country. Like, I think you should be deported.
I think it should be a part of the citizenship exam.
I'm down with that. Clark, the shitter is full.
Yeah, Randy Quaid. I mean, come on. I mean, we all knew he was crazy, but yeah, in those movies, it works.
Yeah. All right, I'm going traditional Christmas fare here. I am going Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Wow.
The speaking of stop animation.
I'm old.
Okay, yes, but that still airs on TV every year. I think it was this week, actually, that it aired on. It might have been last night that it aired on TV. MASH has been off the air since before I was born.
1981.
Okay, the year I was born. but Rudolph is great. I mean, it's so good. And the story of I think people don't realize how much that story is about embracing the things about you that make you different, whether it's Rudolph or the little elf who wants to be a dentist. I want to be a dentist. You know, I mean, these are messages that still resonate with people today, probably even more than they did back in 1904, whenever this thing came out with Burl Ives and everything. I mean, it's such a classic, so good. And who doesn't like singing the song?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, I'm the one with no heart, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, what do you have?
Well, I am a Grinch around Christmas, but number two holiday movie is A Christmas Story. No big surprise. This was a staple growing up for me and my brothers, and I think the reason that I love it so much is because even now when I watch it, I can still hear my brothers laughing at it. And we watch it. It is on our house 24 hours a day during the Christmas TBS marathon, and we watch it all the time. Never fails to make us amused when he walks down in the pink bunny suit. And it's just a holiday classic around our house.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's not one that I've seen it. Obviously, how could you not? It's because it does air for 24 straight hours every Christmas. But it's just one I've never, it never has done much for me.
And I honestly think it is a generation thing. You know, like everyone in my generation, my age group, thinks it's the greatest Christmas movie ever. And everyone who's just like a little bit younger is like, I don't think it's that funny. Like, yeah. It really was a you had to be there kind of a thing. I think it's a lot about nostalgia.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, what's your number two TV episode?
Seinfeld. The Strike.
Festivus?
The Festivus.
Okay.
It's called The Strike, Season 9, Episode 10. And it is when George's father comes up with the holiday Festivus where you air all your grievances about your family. And, oh, man, do I love Festivus.
I take it it's for the airing of grievances, not the feats of strength.
That's correct. I have a huge family. There's 9 kids and 10 grandchildren, and it is just always just a madhouse, and I really wish we had a Festivus poll.
All right. Maybe that can be another episode sometime. all right. I'm going to go with mine. You told me off the air that you were a little, maybe not nervous, but you were expecting that my number one might be your number one TV episode. I am going with In Excelsis Deo.
That is correct.
Season 1, Episode 10 of The West Wing. It does everything. It talks about not only the holidays. It talks about giving and charity and compassion and veterans. Toby finds out that a jacket that he donated to Goodwill was on a homeless veteran when he died, and they contact Toby because his card is in there to try to know what to... I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. It is such a beautiful episode, and then Toby arranges for a funeral for this homeless veteran, and all of the White House staff, including the president, is there. It's just beautiful. Nothing about that show, about that episode, didn't work on multiple levels, and I love it, and I think that's the episode where I really, really, truly fell in love with Toby. He's such a great character, and I love so much about The West Wing. It won't be the last time we talk about The West Wing either today, but In Excelsis Deo, there's my Latin training not working, but In Excelsis Deo is one of my favorite episodes of TV, holiday related or not.
I agree. I think you're made of stone if you don't get choked up at the end when they start playing The Little Drummer Boy.
Oh,
and it's simultaneously the Marines shooting off the shots at the funeral as the staff lining up at the Christmas tree at the White House, and it's simultaneous, and you can't watch it without getting goosebumps.
Yeah, and The West Wing does holiday episodes really, really well, so I had to kind of pare down which one, but I mean, that was clearly it, but there's a lot of really good Christmas and holiday episodes on The West Wing.
But Mrs. Lanningham insisting on going to the funeral because she lost her sons in the war, and Oh, it's just a piece of art.
Well, Mrs. Lanningham plays very heavily into my favorite episode of television of all time. We'll get in. That's not something we're talking about today. But we'll get into that at some point, I'm sure. So, is that your number one TV episode then?
That is correct.
So, what is your number one holiday movie?
Do you want to guess?
It's A Wonderful Life.
No.
Miracle on 34th Street.
No.
Bad Santa.
No.
How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
No.
Okay, I give up. Tell me.
Love Actually.
Oh, holy crap.
I've already watched it twice. It's my favorite. And
you're being serious right now.
Yes, it is fantastic. The cast is incomparable. And it's just about five or six stories interwoven a few weeks before Christmas. And people are unraveling and people are finding their mojo. And it works for me on every level. And Bill Nighy is a hero in this movie. He was a revelation to me. I'd never heard of him before. And his character as an aging rock star trying to have one last big hit, he makes me laugh really hard. So I don't care what you think. It's my favorite.
Good for you. Oh, boy. All right. I mean, I knew you liked, fun, happy stuff, but that's even sappy for you.
Yeah, it is. It is. It 100% is.
Okay. All right. We are going to go from that list to a list that I've referenced here a couple times. We're going to talk about our favorite TV series. We figured it's the holidays. Let's talk about the things we love. It's Thanksgiving this past week. We want to talk about the shows that we are most thankful for. And also, because I don't think we've ever really talked about this, I mean, just in passing, but not as a concerted topic. So we want to make sure we understand where the other one is coming from. We are going with our top five series, TV series, not episodes, but series as a whole. Jen, you will make fun of my number five, so I'm going to let you go with number five first, and then I'll go with mine.
You're going to make fun of mine, I have no doubt, but...
Okay, go ahead.
My number five is Felicity.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me. You've talked about Felicity before.
I do. It really made an impression on me. I had just graduated college when it first came on, so the emotions she was going through through her 4 years were very fresh in my mind, and Kerry Russell is unbelievably likable. Scott Speedman and Scott Foley. I mean, I don't think I've made a secret of my obsession with Scott Foley.
Oh, but... No.
It was one of the first, if not the first, J.J. Abrams success stories. And yeah. The characters and the writing, everything works. I've watched it a few times since then, and it really does hold up, fashions aside. And that's my number five.
All right. Anything Kerry Russell does.
Correct.
She's great. Like, she's likable even as a Soviet spy on the Americans. And not a very nice Soviet spy either.
She's horrible.
Yeah, she's a terrible person. Okay. I did not make fun of you for Felicity, but I would not be surprised if you make fun of me for saying that Saved by the Bell is my fifth favorite TV series of all time. Similarly to where the show debuted in your life with Felicity, Saved by the Bell started when I was middle school, maybe. I don't know exactly what year it started at the top of my head, but I grew up, that was the first thing that was appointment television for me. I remember getting so excited to watch a new episode on Saturday mornings of Saved by the Bell. Loved Zach, loved Kelly. I grew to love Slater, always hated Screech. Jesse and Lisa and all of the myriad of other supporting characters. I still love that show. My brother and I, you know, my brother is like you with Friends episodes. He remembers every detail. I remember plots and guest stars and character names, but he remembers every detail. That is a show that I love. I will go to my grave defending it because I think it actually, for what it was in the late 80s and early 90s, it was a fairly progressive show. They talked about drug addiction on multiple episodes. They talked about anorexia. They talked about issues that other shows geared towards tweens and teens couldn't do before that. And I think it really bridged the gap to things that came in the mid to late 90s that actually did focus on real life teen issues. And I don't think if Saved by the Bell hadn't come along and done some of the episodes that it did, that those shows and those episodes could have been possible later on. So I love me some Saved by the Bell.
Huh.
Didn't see that one coming, did you, Jan?
Not really, but I understand it is a generational thing. I was just a little bit too old for it, so it was kind of like, oh, dear God, how corny. But I can understand someone a few years younger seeing it that way, so I shall reserve my mockery for what I'm sure will be another pick.
No, because I think these four are pretty damn strong. Like, my next four are pretty damn strong. I'll go straight into my number four, and I could not be more excited to say that even though this show went off the air a decade ago, that it's coming back for four 90-minute episodes on Netflix, and that is the absolutely stunningly perfect Gilmore Girls. I love everything about Gilmore Girls and the weird collection of characters in Stars Hollow, Connecticut. What Amy Sherman-Palladino did with creating that world is remarkable. As we'll see from the rest of my list, I like shows in which people talk really fast. So Alexis Bledel and Lauren Graham and Kelly Bishop, for that matter, and Melissa McCarthy before she got off Foul, when she was really sweet as Suki, and Michelle, the snooty hotel concierge. It is such a great show. The characters are so relatable and yet so much cooler than anyone you will ever meet in your whole life. I love everything about Gilmore Girls, and I could not be more excited to see the four words that end the show the way that original creator Amy Sherman-Palladino wanted to end it originally but never had the opportunity to do on its WBCW run.
I'm a Gilmore Girls fan. I did like it. I was a big fan of Kirk.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, speaking of which, he is a huge member of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes, because his brother is...
the guy who directed Guardians.
Yes.
And he appeared in it. He does a lot of the motion capture characters.
Yes, he was. I think he was in Michael Rooker's gang, the one in Guardians.
Was he? Yeah, he was as himself. But I think a lot of like the CGI characters are based on his whatever the thing where they put the balls on the costume.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, all right.
Gilmore Girls is a solid choice. I'm not horribly offended yet.
All right, go ahead. What's your number four?
Buffy.
I got no argument from you there.
Buffy came to me a little bit late. Everybody was telling me to watch it, and I never did. And then I watched an episode in season four entitled Hush, and it was 30 minutes of the episode was in complete silence when demons had come to the town and stolen everyone's voices. I was like, oh, this is brilliant. So I went back, started from the beginning, and... it's one of the best high school TV shows I've ever seen. Granted, there's a supernatural element to it, but the characters, like as we always come back to characters, the side characters, the Scooby Game, Xander and Willow and Cordelia and Angel, it's just a great cast and such witty dialogue. And I still watch it to this day. I'll just pick up episodes. I can watch Hush over and over again. Another episode is in season... The Body, when Buffy's mother dies. It's one of the best episodes in how to deal with the death of a parent I've ever seen.
Yeah, again, Joss Whedon. You mentioned J.J. Abrams with Felicity. You got Joss Whedon from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Much like we talked about with the Friday Night Lights cast, these two guys have gone on to basically rule the world in terms of movie making.
Almost so these literally.
That's not an exaggeration, yeah. Because they are such great storytellers that this is... a great primer to see the beginnings of their career. I watched the first season again. This show came out in 1997, I think.
97 or 98.
1997. I was in high school, and I didn't watch all of it. So I watched like the first few seasons, and I went to college, and you don't have, you know, there's no DVR, and it was hard to follow things. But I loved it because of Sarah Michelle Gellar. I remember watching a syndicated soap opera for teenagers called Swan's Crossing that starred Sarah Michelle Gellar. She played Sydney, the mayor's daughter, and it was just such a terrible show, but I love Sarah Michelle Gellar from that. Then she went on to play Kendall Hart on All My Children for years before getting into a fight with Susan Lucci, where Susan Lucci demanded that Sarah Michelle Gellar be fired. And then shortly after, she went on to Buffy and has pretty much disappeared since then. I mean, like, I know she's married and has kids with Freddie Prinze Jr. So she really hasn't, but she hasn't done much here. You see her come in and out from here and there, but it is a really, really good show. And like you said, a great cast. James Marsters, David Boreanaz, Seth Green, Charisma Carpenter, Allison Hannigan. It's just really, really good TV. All right, I'm going to go with my number three. I know this is one that is probably going to be on your list. It is the much maligned, much mishandled, gone far too soon Aaron Sorkin dramedy Sports Night. It is effectively a behind-the-scenes show of the people running ESPN and SportsCenter. It focuses on the anchors and the executives that make the TV show Sports Night, and it is just so smart. This was before The West Wing. This was before The Social Network. This is really the first thing that I knew consciously of Aaron Sorkin from. I didn't realize that he had written A Few Good Men, but it is such a great show. Dan Rydell and Casey McCall, played by Josh Charles and Peter Krause, are the anchors, and they have such a great relationship. The rapport between them, the witty banter, that fast talking that I loved with Gilmore Girls is so great. Then you've got Felicity Huffman as the executive producer. Joshua Malina, who we talked about last time, who's on Scandal, was on it. Robert Guillaume as the network executive is everything about this show was right up my alley. And no matter how much they tried to ruin it by throwing in a laugh track, or how awful ABC handled everything about this, the show holds up so well. One of the most quotable things I've ever seen. And you throw in people like William H. Macy and Ted McGinley and Terry Polo and all these people who make guest starring roles. It is such a great show. I love everything about it. That's one that I have the entire series for, and I would never turn down watching an episode of Sports Night.
I did really like Sports Night, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, which I know you love to do, but wasn't it one of the first comedies that didn't have, like, a live studio audience or a laugh track? And I don't think people knew exactly how to take it, because we had been trained so much that if there wasn't a studio audience, that it was a drama. But all these people were saying really witty things. And so it took a while for people to kind of, now it's so normal to have that with comedies, but in rewatching it now, you're like, oh man, like this should have had more of a chance, because it was also my introduction to Joshua Malina, who I adore, one of the best people on Twitter, FYI. And also, I was in love with Josh Charles from Dead Poets Society, just so to see him as this comedic character. You're right, it just hit all the right notes, and it was gone way too soon.
Yeah, it really, really smart, and one of my favorites, obviously, especially as someone who grew up watching SportsCenter at that time when SportsCenter was the biggest thing in the world, to see these characters who are so patently modeled after Dan Patrick and Craig Kilborn, it was really, really cool at that time. And it was, for a 22-minute episode, a really, you know, talked about serious things like we're so used to seeing Aaron Sorkin do, but it was one of the first, you know, single-cam comedies that really laid the landscape completely open for things like The Office, for New Girl, and so many different things that broke the mold of what comedies had been for generations before on TV. So Sports Night, it's only two seasons, so if you aren't familiar with it, go check out all 45 episodes. You will absolutely not be disappointed. So what's your number three? We need to pick up the pace, because we are gushing way too much about these shows.
My number three is Pushing Daisies.
Yes! Good one.
As I'm sure you know, it was littered with Broadway stars. There was musical numbers. The art direction is inexplicable, because it was Brian Fuller, and he just, it's like a painting every scene. Kristen Chenoweth, Lee Pace, the adorable, help me with her name, Anna Friel.
Yes, Anna Friel, and I didn't know if you were going with her or Ellen Green or Susie Kurtz.
Ellen Green, Susie Kurtz, I mean.
Shy McBride.
It was
so good.
Again, gone way too soon. It was during the writer strike, and there was a lot of things going on at that time, but it just never found an audience. I mean, bigger than as big as it needed to be, but just a basic, the pie maker who has this uncanny ability to touch people and bring them back from the dead, but he can never touch them again. And then he meets the girl of his dreams, and then he brings her back from the dead, but they're in love and they can never touch. And it's just this amazing story about what is touching involved with a relationship. Can you still be in love? And Kristen Chenoweth's in love with him. And there's so many aspects to it. You can't really sum it up in a few words, but if you ever have the chance to just watch the really too short season and a half that it was on, highly recommend. It's just adorable.
Yeah, really great show. Only on for only aired 22 episodes. And there's still talk of this show being adapted into a Broadway musical because it had such a huge Broadway background with Ellen Green and Kristen Chenoweth and Susie Kurtz, who has a Broadway background, and even people like Raul Esparza, who later went on to be on Brian Fuller's show, Hannibal. It's just so good. There's so many great things in that show that I highly recommend that as well. We're going to go on to my number two, which is Friday Night Lights, which I don't think we need to go into any more than we already did. Beautiful show, beautiful performances. Everything about this show is great, like we mentioned earlier. So, Jen, what is your number two?
My number two is Lost, as you can judge from the giant tattoo on my arm. Huge fan, and I fell in love with it. I just thought that it was a completely new way of seeing TV made, where it's just all about the journey and it's not about the result. And some people were very turned off by that, and I just thought it was inspiring.
Yeah, I love the show as well. I did get lost, not no pun intended. Wow, that was awful. I did lose it, the thread a little bit there in later seasons, but it really was such a brilliant way to tell a TV story that had never been done before, and I still think some of those early seasons are some of the best TV you'll ever see. So I wholeheartedly support Lost as well. Judging by your list, I have a feeling that we are going to share a number one.
I think you're wrong.
I think that we are both going to say that Aaron Sorkin's The West Wing is our favorite TV show of all time, which does my cold heart some good, because that truly is, on so many levels, a perfect encapsulation of the things that I love in TV. It has a purpose. It's trying to do something bigger than just tell a story, but in doing so, it also tells a really poignant and touching emotional story with fully realized, nuanced performances and characters, with a great ensemble cast. Everything about, even the later seasons with the Santos, you know, campaign and everything, are they got a little wonky after Aaron Sorkin left. Much like with Gilmore Girls and Amy Sherman-Palladino leaving, but it is still such a great show. I love The West Wing so much.
I think you're going to have to put your cold heart back in the refrigerator. That is not my number one.
What? Oh, no.
And I think you're going to be more offended that it's not in my top five than you are at my number one.
Okay. Hit me with it. You're going Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks. No contest.
What? I'm shocked.
I don't know why. I've mentioned it many, many times that it's my favorite show of all time. I have artwork on my walls everywhere of Twin Peaks. I've been obsessed with it for 25 years. And again, with the whole like sports night analogy, it was way before its time. If you look at TV now and what David Lynch was doing then, you understand why Lost happened. And the fact that it's coming back next year after it ended and they said literally in the script, I'll see you in 25 years. It is a long overdue ending that these diehard fans of Twin Peaks that we are have long overdue deserved. And it might be a generational thing, because I've had people who are way younger than me watch it and say, oh, this is brilliant. And I've had people watch it and say, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. So I don't know. I don't know what it is about it, but it has stayed with my soul since high school, and I still love it and think it's the greatest show of all time.
I have no opinion, because I've never seen a single episode of Twin Peaks, so I really have no way of telling you you're wrong.
I'm sure you'll find one.
Yeah, well, it's not The West Wing, so you're wrong.
I love The West Wing. It's just not my favorite show of all time.
It's not even in your top five, though.
No.
Ugh. Two Cathedrals. You can't watch the episode Two Cathedrals and not say that this is one of the greatest.
That's not even my favorite episode of The West Wing.
I hate you. Okay. all right, let's get into movies. Let's try not to blow our loads too much on these movies, and let's do these a little quickly. What is your fifth favorite movie of all time?
Almost Famous.
Okay, all right. If we're going cliches, I mean, okay.
Almost Famous because Cameron Crowe is one of my favorite screenwriters, and the fact that it's based on a true story And I don't know, I just, it really worked for me. Following a band in the 80s and that whole culture of rock and roll in the early 80s, before everything got a little out of control, before social media, it was just, I don't know. Cameron Crowe is one of those writers that I'm always going to tune in for.
Elizabethtown, do anything for you?
I never saw that. I didn't hear good things. Not a Kirsten Dunst fan.
No, no. This is what's great about this is I think we agree a lot on TV stuff with the West Wing and Twin Peaks aside. I have a feeling we have very little overlap, if any,
I don't think we'll have any.
Movies. Number five for me is you went cliche and kind of bland. I went with one of the greatest thrillers of all time by one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. I went with Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window. A story that came from a novel with starred Jimmy Stewart, Grace Kelly, a story that is so internal, but it also relies so much on everything else in the world. I love everything about this movie, and I'm so glad that they've made it into a stage show. Kevin Bacon just did the stage version in somewhere in New England. I don't know where it is. It might be coming to Broadway. It is probably based more on the source material than the movie, but I love, love, love Rear Window.
I like Rear Window, not my favorite Hitchcock.
That's fine. You can be wrong. Okay, number four. What is your number four?
Apocalypse Now.
What the?
Yeah. This is going to sound horrible, but my brother took me to see this in the theater when I was 4 years old.
That explains so much about your damaged psyche. It makes so much sense now.
It was terrifying, but I have watched it repeatedly throughout the years, and I think it is a brilliant, brilliant film about what war can do to you. And the whole mentality of soldiers in and out of war. And I think it says a lot on that whole post-Vietnam era. And I'm sticking with it.
Okay. I'm going again.
Didn't see that coming, did you?
No, I don't think you'll see this one coming either. I am going with the Spike Lee masterpiece Do the Right Thing as my number four, a film that I wasn't familiar with until I was assigned to watch it in college, in a college class. And it is such a brilliant way. It's a great film because it feels like an independent film that Spike Lee just made with a bunch of friends in his neighborhood, because it is so unlike even some of Spike Lee's own later films. But it really gets to the heart of racial issues in New York at that time. And it is so brilliant and so honest that it still bears watching every few years for me. So you go with Apocalypse Now. I go with the substantive, majorly important Do the Right Thing.
You don't think Apocalypse Now is important?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a bunch. Yeah, whatever. Okay, what's your number three?
Back to the Future.
What the hell?
Yep, it stands the test of time. I don't have to explain it. Everyone knows the story. I watch it at least a few times a year. Went to the screening for the anniversary a few weeks ago at the original mall.
Of course you did.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, in 1985, that broke the mold. And it still holds up. Love it.
Okay. Yours have been interesting. I'm going from Hitchcock to Spike Lee to something that honestly does venture way out of what you're expecting. I'm going with South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. You didn't see that one coming, did you?
No.
I have honestly never seen a full episode of South Park, the TV show. But this movie is such a perfect film that it shows you why that show has been on for like 20 years. And it also goes to show why Book of Mormon did so well. They understand long form storytelling as well as they do 22 minute episodes. They understand how to make a musical. It was political. It was funny. And Stephen Sondheim says that your animated film is the best piece of American musical theater in a decade. I think that gives credence to anybody putting it third on their list.
Okay.
We're all over the board today, aren't we?
We sure are, and I'm going to even go even further and say my number two is Magnolia.
I fought between Magnolia and Rear Window for my number five.
Yeah, Magnolia, was it the year 2000, I want to say, 1999?
It was my freshman year of college.
Yeah, Paul Thomas Anderson, masterpiece. I wouldn't even know where to begin to give a summary.
No, God, no.
It is so off. It is so not what you're expecting, and you can tell that within the first scene before the credits roll. They're like, you are in for a ride. And it blew my mind. It was one of those movies where I walked out of the theater and went to my car and just sat there for a while because I couldn't drive. And I just had to think. And I still think it's his masterpiece. Everyone talks about all of his other movies, but that for me is the icing on the cake.
Yeah, absolutely an unbelievable, earth-shattering film in so many ways. I have the script I'm looking at the script on a bookshelf right now. It is absolutely fantastic, and we should talk about it at some point because it is so, there's so many layers to everything in that film. It is a fabulous movie. It was right on the edge of my top five, but I'm going to go with one that I think is on everybody's top 10 list. I mean, I don't know about you specifically, but in general, almost everybody has The Godfather in their list. I always go back and forth between whether I like one and two more, but the tiebreaker for me is the baptism scene at the end of The Godfather of the first film. That is probably my favorite scene, along with Make 'Em Laugh and Singing in the Rain. The baptism scene interspliced with the Corleone family taking out the heads of the other five families. It is so beautiful in such a gory, bloody way. It is a great, great masterpiece. And that's why I got Godfather as number two.
I'm not going to argue with you about The Godfather.
Yeah, you better not.
I do love the second one. And it's kind of like, it's like Beatles albums. It's, you wake up one day and one's your favorite, and you wake up the next day and another's your favorite. So I go back and forth, but I'm not going to argue with you. You will undoubtedly make fun of my number one, but it's my favorite movie of all time. It has been.
Wait, what's your
years.
Your number? What's your number two? Did you do number two already?
Magnolia.
Oh, number two is Magnolia. Okay, yes. Yeah. So what's your favorite? Sorry.
I am not going to apologize for this being my favorite movie because I watched it on Thanksgiving and I still laughed and I still cried, and it is The Princess Bride.
I love The Princess Bride. I'm shocked that it's your favorite, but I can't say anything wrong about The Princess Bride. I had a conversation earlier this week about how much I love Mandy Patinkin.
The Princess Bride made me fall in love with movies because my brother had rented it and said, hey, this is pretty cool, you should watch it. And I do believe it was marketed incorrectly because I didn't know what to expect when I was watching it, but it was the first time I saw a movie where it wasn't one thing, and I didn't know how to classify it. It started as a fairy tale, and then it turned into a comedy, and then it turned into an action movie, and then it turned, like, I didn't understand what was happening. And the scene that made me fall in love with it was the sword duel, because the music is composed to their choreography, and I thought that was the most genius thing I'd ever seen. And it just made me fall in love with the movies, and I still think it holds up. The writing, William Goldman's screenplay, is just unparalleled. And like you said, Mandy Patinkin as Inigo Montoya, I mean, that's got to be one of the greatest characters in movie history.
Yes, in that line, I'm Inigo Montoya, you get my father prepared to die. Like, that is one of the best
fighting
things
Christopher
of
Guest,
all time.
No less. I mean, it just does, it's my favorite.
Yeah, and then you mentioned, you know, Psych earlier, and then Cary Elwes, I didn't even know how to say it.
He plays a great villain on Psych.
Yeah, he plays one of the main villains over four or five seasons. I don't think he did a handful of episodes, but Devereaux, one of the memorable villains on Psych as well. So there's good. You're not going to get any argument from me on The Princess Bride, and I don't think I'm going to get any argument from you on my number one, a movie that in my lifetime reshaped what movie making was. It was a game changer in every shape, form, and fashion, and that is Pulp Fiction. You can argue all you want about Quentin Tarantino and him as a person, but that movie is really, in my mind, perfect. From beginning to end, the disjointed narrative and how everything comes together, the performances, the weirdness of what they were doing, everything from, you know, what's in the briefcase, everything about that film worked for me on every level. I've often said that if Quentin Tarantino had been born 30 years before he was, he would have been the greatest playwright that Broadway had ever seen. I think the stuff that he does, that he's done after that, and even before it with Reservoir Dogs, but Pulp Fiction to me is a perfectly made movie that fit perfectly into where I was when that movie came out. Sometime, I think, either when I was in late high school or in 94. College. Early high. Maybe I didn't see it until I was later in high school. But I absolutely love Pulp Fiction, and I think, like you said with The Princess Bride, it stands the test of time, and John Travolta, Samuel L. Jackson, Bruce Willis, Harvey Keitel, Christopher Walken, Uma Thurman, everything about that movie just works.
I'm not going to argue with you about that. Quentin Tarantino is my absolute favorite. I struggled with number 5 and almost put Kill Bill. I see everything he does on opening day. He just makes me very, very happy as a filmmaker. I saw Pulp Fiction in the theater 7 times.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm older than you. And yes. You're right.
They would not have let me into the movies.
They would have in Allentown, trust me. But, it's perfect. Everything he does turns to gold. I love every single one he did, even Jackie Brown.
That's the one I haven't seen. Well, that and Dusk Till Dawn. I've not seen either of those. Yeah. But I even love Grindhouse. Like 18 people saw Grindhouse.
I
love both of them, both his and Robert Rodriguez's movie in that. But great, great one. So I think we have found something to disagree on, and that is our film lists, because they could not be more different.
No.
Unlike our TV.
I have no argument with yours, though.
Oh, I have plenty of arguments with yours. But that's good. We finally found something that we wholeheartedly disagree on in terms of our list. You might like some of mine, I might like some of yours, but it's good to know that we aren't the same person.
That's very, very good to know.
But I think this has been productive for us, Jen. We've talked about things. We've aired some of our grievances. We've festivused this out. I feel pretty good about this.
I agree.
And we didn't always agree, so that's good, too.
That's always good, so.
All right, you want to close us out?
Sure. And that'll do it for this year on Some Like It Pop. Matt and I are both writers on BroadwayWorld.com. Matt has a daily feature based on his article a day resolution. How's that going, by the way?
It's going well. I'm actually, I was supposed to post my Jessica Jones review on Friday. Haven't gotten to it yet because I haven't finished it, but that'll go up. But other than that, it's going well. I'm, I'm now 89 articles in since the start of September.
Well, you heard it here first. His resolution is going well. He reviews both film and theater in the scene of Orlando, Florida. And I, myself, recap Walking Dead, Empire, Scandal, and Shameless that begins in January, as well as miscellaneous interviews and opinion pieces. You can follow me on Twitter at EponineQ, EPONINEQ, and Matt at BWWMatt. So for Matt Tamanini, editor extraordinaire, and myself, Jennifer McHugh, self-proclaimed TV queen, we shall see you next time. And don't forget, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. I'm guessing we have no pull at Hamilton, right?
None.
Yeah.
None.
I didn't think so. I've asked 5 people.
What are you trying to do?
I was checking my fantasy lineup, and then I was like, oh, I should focus on it.
You betcha, don't you know?